looks like the GOP is just going crazy trying to figure out a way how to dump Trump. Doing everything they can. There's a conspiracy. We got another warning that Trump will not survive another couple comments that he made. And increasingly it is being stated by some of the biggest analysts in the GOP or on the conservative side of the aisle or just regular analysts that basically they are not going to Trump is going to be able to live this thing out. He's got a strong possibility of getting elected. So all of the people out there who consider themselves to be experts in the political realm, who originally said Trump is a joke, he doesn't have what it takes, he is too rude, he's not polite. You have to look at Scott Walker's way of being polite to people, or Rick Perry. Rick Perry said he was going to make it his career move to criticize Trump. Man, he fell out of that race so fast. And the other people that went after Trump, Graham. And you fill in the blank there. Anybody who's gone after Trump has signed their own death warrant. So in the meantime, there is this very, very angry, very, very angry response to the idea that Trump would dare to criticize G.W. Bush on his actions during the war on terror, 9/11 and everything. And so I'll play some of that for you. I wanted to let you know, obviously, there was a very heavy storm last night, and one of the biggest lightning shots that I've ever been around in terms of being close, there was a lightning shot that came down. It sounded like that it hit the house right behind mine. It had to be within a few hundred feet because the flash and the rumble came down at the same time. Spectacular. And a fair amount of rain, but it was, I think, the lightning that really got my attention. And there was shot after shot. It seemed to be coming off the Oregon Mountains more than anything. But I've got some, here is a little bit of weather. Now, here we've got three things going on. We've got, number one, this formation of a hurricane that's down or a tropical storm that's down below Mexico that's coming up. We've got another event coming from the left, and then we've got El Nino. So here's a little clip from the Weather Channel, if I can get it to play.
We certainly are keeping tabs on a lot of significant rainfall that's occurred across southern Mexico. Look at that ponding on the roads and water so high, it's literally going up the side of buildings. And now we have Tropical Storm Patricia on our hands. Look how far down the list we have already gotten. Well, here's a little bit more info on Patricia. We are anticipating to see an increase in forward speed followed by a turn to the west-northwest by the time we get around to Wednesday night, and then more of a turn towards the northwest on Thursday, at which point we believe Patricia could get upgraded to hurricane status.
And so we've got
you have the hurricane. You have the...
You normally see these things come up like that on that side of the... of Mexico, but it's happening. Of course, global warming fanatics will tell you that's because of global warming. Have you ever noticed that people that are into global warming, every single thing, the tiniest thing, you know, the local reservoir could be down 3 inches. Oh, it's global warming. Flash flood in Mississippi, global warming. It doesn't matter what it is. You know, a bunch of trees are taken out by beetles in the middle of Oregon, but it's global warming. You know, it's just like there's no end. Everything is proof of global warming. Anyway, here's another clip from the Weather Channel.
So many of you know how serious the situation with the drought has been in Texas. It's been very extreme, especially across central and eastern sections of the state. And we have the current drought monitor, which also shows how dire the drought has been, affecting a lot of folks in Louisiana, across the parishes there, and spilling over into Mississippi. Well, we are about to see some remedy to this with some tropical moisture that's going to get surged in from the south, coupling that with our system that's going on across the southwest, and then adding some extra oomph to all of this is going to be the moisture and energy from Tropical Depression 20E in the eastern Pacific. So let's talk about a few specifics. As you can see, we're going to get some rainfall into Texas towards the middle of this week. You also saw where those thunderstorms are still going to be generated across sections of Arizona and New Mexico. Here's some footage of that that's already occurred. But problematic, of course, is that we could wind up seeing a lot of rain and all at once. So we could be going from dealing with drought to heavy rain and flooding, and also be dealing with some high surf and rip currents along the Texas coast.
Now, we're talking about 2 to 3 inches in some areas in New Mexico. Here's another clip. Hailstorms from, I believe this is Arizona.
That is hail coming down in Glendale, Arizona. It's another day of storms in the forecast for them, but changes are on the way. And this has been a pretty stormy scene, not only in Arizona, but parts of New Mexico, all due to this upper level low. Finally, though, it is getting the boot, and we are going to see some changes out to the west, along with the south and the northeast, too. So three big weather changes on the way. Here we go with our southern soaker. Now, this rain that we're seeing out to the west, you can see it pushes off to the east by late week. However, that will translate to some heavy rain for parts of Texas. And we're talking some pretty decent rainfall here. Even though this is an area that needs the rain, that's going to be a lot of rain in a short period of time, 5 to 8 inches in northern parts of Texas by late week.
All right. So according to this map that they've put up, we're in the section where we could be getting an inch, up to an inch, El Paso, Las Cruces area, but we're very close to an area that could get 2 to 3 inches. So this is through Friday, a southern soaker, they're calling it. But, you know, you've got a couple of events here. One is this this tropical depression, this thing that's supposed to turn into a hurricane coming up, and other stuff coming up, and that's from the left side. So this tropical depression slash hurricane is going to be coming up Mexico, and then it's going to veer into Mexico and should pretty much be a direct hit on us. Although by the time it gets here, in theory, it's not going to be a hurricane. And I don't know what the wind is going to be like, but we've got rains in Texas between San Antonio, a little bit in Houston, and from San Antonio to Dallas. We're talking 3 to 5 inches in the panhandle. Much of the panhandle is supposed to get 3 to 5 inches. And then to the right of Amarillo, crossing over into Nebraska or Oklahoma, pardon me, 5 to 8 inches, a big chunk there. 5 to 8 inches, so that's quite a bit. Now, we've got flood alerts from well past Roswell on the left, maybe all the way over to the mountains above Alamogordo, those mountains up there, down into Midland, down all the way into on top of the Mexican border, up to Lubbock and Amarillo. The whole panhandle has got flood alerts on it. So that is, and through Sunday, here's another chart that I'm looking at with rainfall from San Antonio to Dallas, certainly 5 to 8 inches, but a little bit of the area near Dallas, a few strips, 8 to 12 inches. So we're talking about a foot, and these are areas that already got a good soaking. They got a good soaking from those previous floods. So even though they claim that the Texas is in a drought right now, I don't know how exactly they define all this stuff, but all right. So we're going to have more moisture here. And the question is how many inches? And it looks like we could easily get an inch, if not 2 to 3, depending on how these weather patterns kind of play out. Kelly O'Connell, going to come back and talk about Trump a little bit. 616, 617 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, 523-1450, and we'll be right back. It's 6:20. We've got some extraordinary things going on right now in Washington. It is a full-scale attack against Trump, and I got my buddy Pete. We got Pete on the line, and I asked Pete from out in Florida to call in and give a little commentary. And Pete, good morning to you.
Good morning, Kelly. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Pretty good.
All right. So we're looking at the aftermath of the Obama presidency, how it's playing out, who's next in line. And there is a story out there right now that Donald Trump, they're putting together a death machine to destroy him. But what some people are afraid is it's going to destroy the whole party. If you could figure out a way to get Trump out of the game, and right now, he's surging in the polls with his 9/11 criticism. It just looks increasingly like he's got a clear run to the White House if he doesn't screw up. But what's your take on this from the left side of the aisle?
Well, he definitely is. He's definitely struck a nerve. I don't think anybody can dispute that. And he has a very strong group that is. That is his supporters. I think the problem for the Republicans is going to be, can he win a general election? And if you take a look at just the way our system works, look at our electoral college, I just don't know if he can pull the states that he needs to in order to win.
Well, what states does he need? I mean, there's widespread support for this guy, and I think it's not just on the right. It's growing on the left. For example, there are a lot of people on the left who have resented the GOP owning the 9/11 topic and feel like Bush did not do a good job when he was in office. They feel like maybe he could have stopped 9/11, but if he couldn't, we didn't have to go into Iraq. So there's going to be a lot of people on the left that Trump's criticism of George W. is going to really, really stand for something.
No, I agree. And I definitely think he knows how to frame an issue and have people start to talk about it. And in a way, this is gone, this whole 9/11 issue. I mean, on the right is giving Hillary Clinton a really hard time for Benghazi. I mean, it was clearly a terrorist attack, just like 9/11 was a terrorist attack. And they're saying, well, this could have been prevented. You could have done this. You could have done that.
Yeah.
And I think Bush is saying the same thing. George Tenet knew, or at least there was a lot of chatter right before 9/11.
Yeah. And I mean, they're saying that Bush just got into office for heaven's sakes. How could he have stopped it? And yet, in theory, and Pete is an ex-Marine who was a JAG, a judge advocate general. He was, in other words, a lawyer for the Marines. Isn't there some feeling out there that when Bush came in, he wasn't paying attention?
Oh, absolutely. I think the big knock on him very early in the presidency was that he was always in Texas, or he was on vacation, or he just was kind of out of touch and had, you know, that powerhouse staff of his, that cabinet. They were the ones was running everything. And I think when 9/11 happened, it really at least changed how, you know, he handled, he managed his office. But you know, going back to that big point of, can Trump pull the votes he needs to pull? I think all my Republican friends, we have this discussion, they talk about how the public is, you know, right versus left, how these elections always come down to 1 or 2%, if that, in the popular vote. But the popular vote just doesn't matter. What matters is, what states do you poll? And it's boiled down to maybe 5 states now.
All right, so your
really
states
are changing the election.
Your states are Texas, Florida, California's in the mix, but it's always going to go liberal. New York, which is technically usually liberal, could actually go for Trump, and you know, I mean, in some of these models,
it could. But you know, I see the big states. People say that, but if you look at the big states, in the last election, obviously, where Republican won, well, when there was a non-incumbent, it was Bush v. Gore, and you know, the big states. I think the big states break down like this: in an open election, you have California's going to go blue, Texas will go red, New York will go blue. And then the other issue is Florida. That's really the big state now. The other big state with the back in 2000, I think only had 20 electoral college points, and now it's up to 29. It's almost increased by 50. So Florida is really important.
It's important.
And I think Bush has got a big presence in Florida. So he may pull Florida.
Are we talking Trump or Bush?
I'm sorry, Bush. I'm sorry, Trump. If Trump pulls Florida, he could pull Florida. And then the other big swing states are Ohio, Pennsylvania, and to some degree, Colorado, North Carolina, and Virginia.
Right. Then those are all big, big number of states. But let me ask you this, Pete, and I think you've got a pretty dry eye on this whole thing. Hillary Clinton is badly damaged. If she was a warship, she'd be in the dock for repairs. There's a couple of things that are really kind of tying her down. One is the email thing, and the other one's Benghazi. And it's just this general sense that a lot of people have, she's not an honest person. In polling against all of the Republican candidates at this point, she loses. So how does she come in and beat Trump?
Well, I guess the first, I like to look at the data of those polls. When I look at that data, that appears to be a kind of a raw sampling. It's a sampling sometimes from swing states, it's a sampling from some red states, some blue states. It's just kind of raw data. And I think that's the whole point I'm trying to make is, you know, we can really run into a chance, a real possibility where we have a candidate winning the popular vote, but losing the electoral college just because of the way the states are broken.
And that's
down.
What you claim happened with Bush v. Gore.
Right. Right. You had that. And of course there was Nader was thrown into the mix too, where he didn't pull any states, but he took away raw vote and swing states from Gore. And I think that's how Bush was able to pull the electoral college the way that he did. It was still really close. It came down to that one state of Florida. And I think Bush only won by a few electoral college vote points. So you could have a Trump who's very popular in some states, but if he wins those states, he could win by 70%. It doesn't really change the fact he just wins the state. He doesn't get any more of a bonus from winning.
What states is he most popular in?
You know, I think he's real popular in the South right now. I mean, look at any of his rally in the South.
Mississippi.
He's going nuts for him. I think a place like California, they're running the other way from him.
But you've got to write California off. California is so left, you know. You can't even, you know. That's already in the column. I think you're
sure.
You know, you've got to talk about places like you've already mentioned, like Florida, which is up in the air, and the Carolinas and Virginia. Some of these big population states that could go either way.
Right, they could go. He's got to make his emphasis on Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Florida. If a Republican doesn't take Ohio and Florida, I don't think they have a chance. Pennsylvania may work, but you know, in the Bible Belt of like a North Carolina, you know, it's really strange. It's like people either love him there or they hate him. And I just don't know how that's going to play out.
Well, I mean, increasingly, as Trump takes on one big topic after another, I think you can't take your eyes from him. You got to listen to what he says, because he always comes up with something that's kind of incisive. It's exciting. It's interesting, whether you agree with it or not. Now, there was Scott Adams that does the Dilbert cartoon series, the famous one that is kind of the, I guess, a foundation for the TV show The Office. He says that Trump is a master wizard. He creates verbal kill shots. After they're used against his opponents, you can never see his opponents the same way again. So, for example, when he says Bush is low energy, you can never look at Bush as being the alpha male in the group anymore. Bush himself calls himself the happy tortoise. But I think Trump has had a devastating effect against Jeb.
Oh, I definitely agree. I think Jeb's personality, I mean, say what you want to about his brother was definitely that alpha male type. And I just don't think Jeb has that same personality. And Trump is completely, you know, in a very short, concise phrase in discussion, has really put him in that box.
Verbal kill shot.
The second tier type guy. I mean,
verbal
not really
kill
the
shot.
Alpha male that you want running the show.
Okay, so if Trump was going to be as wise as he could possibly be on a vice president, who would that person look like?
Well, you know, I've kind of looked into who he would pick. You know, I think an outside chance would be Chris Christie, because Christie can kind of put up with him, has the same kind of mentality, can stand up to him, kind of be his own person. The only problem would obviously be that Christie is from, you know, the New York, New Jersey area.
Right next door.
So
plus Christie is going to take up two seats in the Trump airliner, which might cause a problem.
That's true. Maybe that means no press. The press can't sit, or at least the payload. They'll have to leave them behind.
How about Trump with somebody like Cruz, who's he's already made peace with? George Bush says he hates Trump in so many words. George W. Cruz has irritated the daylights out of the Bush family. And you've got Cruz coming from Texas, a must-win state. He's got more stature than Rubio. He's a little bit older. He's a little bit more accomplished. And he brings in a couple of other things, far right, and evangelical.
Right. Yeah, I can definitely see it's a possibility. I mean, you definitely laid out the argument for Cruz. And I think Cruz is the type of politician who, I mean, if he can get on the vice president ticket, he'll have absolutely no objection to it whatsoever. I mean, he could have anybody, I think, be the president, and Cruz, if that position's offered to him, he's going to jump at that just for his kind of political future.
Of course. Now, let's talk briefly about the Democratic candidates. Who do you see? I mean, do you not see Hillary as almost fatally damaged by this? You know, like, she could be indicted on any given day on the email scandal, for example.
Yeah, I know you and I have talked about this quite a bit. And before, I really wasn't too concerned about it. I saw this as all kind of a political witch hunt, and that it'd all be explained. But there's no doubt there have been some serious missteps by her and her campaign. Some things have come out that I think you show is just either completely uninformed or just untruthful statements from her camp and her directly at times.
Mm-hmm.
So people on the left are very concerned about her. I think that's why they have Biden waiting in the wings, just kind of tap dance they're performing right now. He's not in.
He's making bizarre statements, though. He's saying that I was in the room when every major decision was made. He almost makes it seem like he was the adult in the room and gave Obama the okay on these major decisions. I mean, how does that play out?
Well, I know old Uncle Crazy Joe, he's going to have his problems if he jumps in. The rumors about the guy, you know, you hear from the inner workings on the left, you just think, oh boy, this is going to be interesting. Hopefully, he has some great handlers this time and keep him in line. But you know, I think Clinton has to get through tomorrow. She has to get through tomorrow well. I think that committee has shot themselves in the foot numerous times.
The Benghazi committee?
Yeah, the Benghazi hearings are tomorrow, where she's being called as a witness. If she can get through that, I think, you know, I think your right's making a big deal about all these things, her truthfulness. But if you look at a lot of voters who are going to vote for her, I just don't think they really care.
Do you think she's going to end up like a whale with a bunch of harpoons broken off in her hide?
Well, that's definitely the strategy. The strategy is to just kind of create this noise about her, kind of a low rumble, and then they bring it all home during the general election. They just hammer away at all these things.
Pete, when's the right time for her to step out of the closet and embrace her, you know, her kind of her lesbian spirit?
I don't know. Maybe she gets in the White House, she'll kick Bill to the curb and bring.
All right, so we got to go here, but give us your predictions on the election.
My prediction on the election: I don't think Trump's going to make it. I think somehow, some way, Bush's war chest is going to make him the nominee for the right, and I think it's going to be another 300 plus win for the Democrat in the general election, and it's going to be the same thing as 2008, the same thing as 2012.
Where's my Pepto-Bismol? Where's my Pepto-Bismol? Pete, thanks for giving your expert commentary. How's the weather in Florida?
Oh, it's great. It is just beautiful. It was got down the 60s. It gets up into the high 80s during the day.
You poor Sunny, thing.
Beautiful. Hey, tough life here.
Congratulations on your big win at court. I won't ask you to pass out the details, but nice job. We'll get you back on the show real soon, okay?
Thanks, man. Good talking to you.
Yeah, you too. Have a good day. All right, folks, take a little break here. We'll come back. I'm going to talk a little more about Trump. And we've got Judge Ryan coming on in a few minutes. 636 Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450, KOBE, 523-1450. Mayor Ken, get on this show! I have apologized for suggesting that you're going back into sumo wrestling. What a silly, I don't know where I got that idea from, but get on this show here, Ken. Folks, I really do not think that the mayor is going to come on the show because he did not deem me worthy to even talk to. He just demanded the tapes from the sumo wrestling comments as if he were working for the FBI. And who knows, maybe he needs a little side income. 6:36, and we'll be back to talk about Trump.
Why can't you see what you're doing to me? When you don't believe a word I say.
Kelly here. This Friday, the mayoral candidates are invited on the show. Mayor Ken, come on. Get down here. Talk to the people. Talk to your constituents. Are your people only those in the middle and the left, Mayor Ken, or maybe just on the far left? Do you look around this town and think, man, what remarkable growth we've had in the last 8 years? Are you like David who called in and say, why do you attack my mayor? We've got, after all, food. We've got running water. We've got shelter. How can you possibly criticize this guy? I mean, we've got all the elements of a great life. I mean, what is this, David, an internment camp? We should be thankful for the sugar cookies that we've been given for supper tonight. All right, so here's some themes playing out that you should be aware of. Number one, a massive attack against Trump. A massive attack against Trump from the left. A second one is whatever it is that's going on with Hillary, and she's going to be testifying before the Benghazi committee. And you can bet that she's going to turn this thing into poor little me and try to get everyone to see that Benghazi was no big deal. It was a terrible accident, but you can't go back. You can't unring a bell. And so what difference does it make is her point. All right. Now, so another third prong of this trident, this devilish trident that's menacing the country is Joe Biden. But here's a little bit from Trump. He stirred the pot again. Can you believe it? On 9/11, How dare you attack George W. Bush? And by the way, if you're on the right, if you're a GOP member, if you're a conservative, if you're a libertarian, if you consider yourself a little from the center to the right, a person who would naturally have kind of had sympathy for George W., what card rating do you give him, A to F, for his presidency, 5-2-3-14-50? Here's a little bit from Trump.
Started because Jeb made the statement that under my brother, we were safe. Well, if he would have qualified by saying after the attack, but he didn't do that. So I said the other day, because somebody brought up that statement, and I said in an interview that, you know, how can you say you were safe under his brother when we just had the worst attack in the history of our country? You can't say you were safe. You can say, yes, we did well after, but then we also made mistakes there because, yes, we were safe in a sense, but we went into Iraq, which was a disaster decision, just a disastrous decision. Not Afghanistan, because that's probably where we should have gone in the first place, but Iraq was a disastrous decision. If you look at what happened, number one, I would have had much stronger immigration policies. I'm not saying I would have prevented it, but I would have had a chance because I'm pretty good at this stuff.
So, but I want to ask you about that.
I would have had much stronger immigration policies.
Yes, but meaning that you would not, if you were president, you wouldn't allow student visas. I mean, as you know, the high
I would have had a much tougher visa program. The visas are too easy. I would have had a much tougher,
you wouldn't allow those going forward.
But Allison.
Yeah.
They knew an attack was coming. George Tenet, the CIA director, knew in advance that there would be an attack. And he said so to the president. And he said so to everybody else that would listen. And that came out. The other thing is the FBI, the NSC, and the CIA were not talking to each other. These are the three main agencies. They weren't talking to each other. And they weren't talking because they didn't like each other. And they had a lot of problems getting along. And that's leadership. You have to get your three main agencies to talk to each other.
Yeah.
They had a lot of information that if it could have been correlated, it would have been very, very helpful.
Yeah.
You know, as President Truman said, the buck stops here.
All right. So those are the statements by Trump. And as usual, he's not backing down. Now, the Republican establishment is finally coming to grips with a horrifying fact for them. Everybody realizes now that he can win. Trump can win. They've not made peace with this victory, though. So here's a question. The GOP has been highly dysfunctional for the last decade or so. I would say that GOP has been dysfunctional into the George W. Bush regime because they made a lot of decisions that were not good long-term decisions. They basically sold their soul to the devil for a handful of magic beans. If I can mix two stories. But what we ended up with is Obama. Love him or hate him, he's the greatest deficit spender in history, and he's just got a radically different view of what America means than the people on the right. And the people on the right have no one to blame but themselves for that. If, for example, Bush hadn't deficit spent the way he did, Obama, even though he obviously lied his rear end off about coming in and cutting the spending in half, he wouldn't have had the excuse of deficit spending. He wouldn't have had the excuse of these activities during the war. And by the way, we're staying in Afghanistan. The guy that ends wars is staying in Afghanistan. But, you know, the main thing is you can't blame on Obama what George Bush or the GOP laid a foundation for. I mean, in many important ways, George W. Bush was not a conservative, and to the extent that he was not a conservative, and this is one of the themes that I hope you pick up from my show, a recurrent theme is to the extent that you're not putting out conservative policies, you're not looking to the future, you're not caring for your people, you're not trying to create a future, what you're doing is just living off of propaganda and cotton candy and just a completely unwholesome approach to life. And that's what you end up as in a situation like we're up to our necks in deficit. We've got a completely chaotic and counter intuitive foreign policy. And we're almost at war with ourselves. And we voted for a uniter, you know, a post-racial uniter. I mean, the reality of Obama has been horrifying. And I'm saying you cannot blame him. You've got to blame the GOP and Bush. 646, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450, AM Las Cruces. And we'll, I'm going to come back and talk about Biden a little bit, Mr. Air Pockets in his brain. All right, so I've got a clip of the original comments from Trump. I want to focus a little more on Trump, but here's some of the original comments. Check it out. And I think Jeb's response is pathetic to Trump, even though he's trying to defend his brother.
Getting more of words that's raging between Republican rivals Donald Trump and Jeb Bush. The latest twist came just over an hour ago. Donald Trump tweeting, Jeb is fighting to defend a catastrophic event. I'm fighting to make sure it doesn't happen again. Jeb is too soft. We need tougher and sharper. So this all started on Friday night when Trump implied President George W. Bush bears part of the blame for 9/11.
When you talk about George Bush, I mean, say what you want, the World Trade Center came down during his time. If you
hold on, you can't blame George Bush for that.
He was president, okay? Don't blame him or don't blame him, but he was president.
In response to that interview, Jeb Bush tweeted, quote, how pathetic for Donald Trump to criticize the president for 9/11. We were attacked and my brother kept us safe. Well, then things boiled over again on the Sunday morning shows.
Jeb said, we were safe with my brother. We were safe. Well, the World Trade Center just fell down. Now, am I trying to blame him? I'm not blaming anybody. But the World Trade Center came down. So when he said we were safe, that's not safe.
My brother responded to a crisis, and he did it as you would hope a president would do. He united the country, he organized our country, and he kept us safe. Mr. Trump talks about things that, though he's still on The Apprentice, it looks as though it's he's an actor playing the role of a candidate for president.
Trump then fired back on Twitter. Jeb, why did your brother attack and destabilize the Middle East by attacking Iraq when there were no weapons of mass destruction? Bad info? Meantime, Jeb Bush is fundraising off this fierce back and forth. With this on his campaign website, it reads, President George W. Bush kept the country safe. Tell Donald Trump enough is enough. Let's bring in our political panel to talk about this morning. Former Vermont Governor and Democratic National Committee Chairman.
Well, anyway, I mean, what you can hear here is that Jeb Bush sounds like an amateur in responding to the statements that Trump made. He sounds like an amateur. And I mean, it's just, I don't know what else to say other than Jeb Bush does not have, I believe, really what it takes. He sounds very weak. Now, here's a response from John Feehery about this statement from Trump on Bush. And I think Bush is exposed here, and there's ridiculous to pretend that it's had nothing, the attack had nothing to do with Bush when Bush was in the presidency. Is it his fault? I'm not saying it's his fault, but it's ridiculous to say it, although it happened on his watch, he's totally innocent. I don't know what happened preceding that, but there were, George Tenet was warning the White House, and I don't think the White House took it as seriously as they could. Here's theory. Trump will not last long after attacking popular George Bush. I got news for you. George W. Bush is not popular.
MSNBC contributor, also Republican strategist John Feehery. With a welcome to you both. John, I'm going to reach out to you first because the critics say Jeb Bush has let himself be tormented by Trump. Do you agree?
I think the whole Republican field has been tormented by Donald Trump. I would say that among the Republican base, George W. Bush is still pretty popular and getting more popular by the day. Donald Trump attacking George W. Bush is a curious strategy. But listen, Trump is brilliant at social media. He's brilliant at being newsworthy, even though he says things that might be outside the mainstream. He's great at getting himself in the news, and that's why he's atop the polls. The question is, how long will he last? And my guess is not much longer.
Once again, these people are coming in. They can't stand him. They hate his guts because he's not a traditional conservative. And this is the conversation that I've had with every one of my liberal friends, my sister, Pete, anybody who's a liberal on this that I've talked to about it. I've said all of these people go to Washington, D.C. and lie. I mean, I don't think Steve Pierce does. But I think that from my observation anyway, but I just think all of these people will say whatever they have to go to get to Washington. And when they get there, they don't fight Obamacare. They don't try to seal the border. They just get sucked up into this zombie camp. It's the Walking Dead all over again. And if we're going to elect a liar, in which we're just fuming for years that they keep lying to us and we're getting played like fools, why not elect somebody who's at least entertaining and might have the cojones to make some changes. Folks, we'll be going to take a little break here and have a little time when we get back. All right, so we've got now Joe Biden. Check this out. Joe Biden might jump in.
He said, it's always judgment. It's never, never appropriate to assume a motive because you don't know. And today, I suspect that Amy will tell you, it's all about motive up there. It's not about judgment. You're a bad person. It's about what people think your motive is and ascribe a motive. And it's often you can't get to yes. You can't get to yes after I tell you, I think you're dishonest or you're in the pocket of the industry. And it's awful hard for us to get to yes.
All right. So Biden talking about this idea that he disagreed with the president. He said, let's go to the right. And the president says, no, I'm going to go to the left. I don't know anything about that. I know that Biden has probably been the biggest enabler since Hitler worked with whatever his publicist was, his minister of propaganda. 6:59, and we'll take a break. Come back and talk to Judge Ryan about his upcoming race. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450. 523, 1450. We'll be back. Thank you. And got Judge Ryan here, but before we get into that, just a couple more comments, a little bit about an article in Commentary Magazine from Peter Wehner, and another one, a comment on our own leadership here in the city. I think this has got a lot of weight to it. Obama has wrecked his party, from Peter Wehner, and talking about how the landscape of the nation has changed since Mr. Obama went into the Senate, since President Obama went into office, they've got a swing of, I think it's 16 or 17 Senate seats. It's 54-44 now, which is a major change. And the House, 247-188. There's 31 Republican governors now. Republicans control 68 of 98 partisan state legislative chambers, and the most state legislatures since the 1920s. If you look at a map, it's absolutely astounding that the change that has occurred. And I think that is at the grassroots level, people are expressing themselves. And I think one of the interesting things that's happened is at the national conversation, it's assumed that everything is liberal and Democrat because the president's in office. But Trump, I think his popularity is showing that what the average person thinks has not been recognized or reflected in the national debate for quite some time. And people are very, very, very frustrated and with what's going on there. In addition to that, people are concerned that it's the national leadership has just gone off the rails, and we're never going to get back the country that we wanted, and that Barack Obama basically lied to get into the office, and he's broken his word numerous times, and that his purpose in there is not to build America, but to break America and reform it on a socialist or a more leftist line. I don't think anybody can really disagree that his emphasis since he's been there has been to bring things to the left. Now, there is another issue here that has not come up. The mayor of the city refuses to even talk to me. He will not have a conversation with me. He'll only text to me. When he heard that I made a joke about him becoming a sumo wrestler or going back to sumo wrestling, he just texted me, "I need a tape of that." Like, he works for the FBI. I have to follow what he does, what he tells me. It was a typical example, failed example of bureaucracy, a bureaucrat trying to push somebody around, just a private citizen. Just because I have a radio show doesn't mean I'm not a private citizen. I'm not in office. And it's inappropriate for the mayor, in my opinion, to not have a conversation about it and act like I work for him, like I have to give him this tape. By the way, the day that he asked for, there was not a connection between the phone and the Blog Talk Radio, which is where I simulcast from. So I couldn't give him that tape, which he found to be very mysterious. But I just, for some reason, I always get connect the show through a Google phone, which is a free phone, and it's got a pretty good connection. And for whatever reason, that day it would not connect, and I had to reboot the machine and everything. But the next morning, it just so happens. But I played the clip for you before. I've apologized for it. The upshot is that this mayor was not going to come on the show, I think, because of how people tore into him last time he was here. I think the mayor holds himself above the city as being some sort of a great person. And my proof of that is because I believe he talks down to people. He's condescending. And I think it doesn't really fit with a city this size with everybody in the city knows everybody else. Why would the mayor feel the need or the right to be condescending and talk down to people? It didn't make any sense, number one. Number two, it's been pointed out to me a number of times that the structure of this city's government is based on a powerful city manager and not a mayor. So the mayor's a figurehead. Ken Miyagashima himself has apparently said on a number of occasions, I'm just another member of the city council. So my sense is that if he wanted to be the county manager, he should have just left office. Now, I think it is extraordinarily revealing that when he went to try to be the city manager or the county manager, he didn't know that he wouldn't get through the first round. I find that astounding. I find that stunning. I also find it to be troubling that he doesn't have enough common sense and insight into the processes of government that he couldn't have found out whether call somebody in the county and say, would I make it through the first round? I think it was an arrogant choice of his. It was indifferent towards the citizens. What does it tell you that he was trying to drop the job of mayor to go get a better paying job, maybe with more power? It tells me he doesn't care about this city as much as he does about himself, that he got elected to be mayor. And then, you know, he immediately tries to jump into this other job. It was he made himself into a laughingstock by not being able to get through the first round. And here's the bottom line on that. He does not have the qualifications to be a county manager. And having said that, why do we believe that he's got the qualifications to be a mayor, even a figurehead mayor? If he can't get through that process, why do we think that he would be appropriate or fit for any other job? And maybe sounds like I'm taking a switch after this guy, going after him. But I mean, I think the upshot is that just the way that he interacted with me on I'm trying to get him on this show is the way that's who he is, you know? And it like, he wants a clip from this show. He's not going to bother to call me. He's going to call my boss, or he's going to text me and demand a copy of it. I mean, I don't work for the guy, and he's definitely not going to push me around. And, that's not going to happen. And, more to the point, and I think really the topic here is, what kind of a mayor has he been, even as a figurehead? Even as a figurehead, what kind of a mayor has he been? And it just seems to me that the symbol of that has been his, you know, getting involved in the Oregon Mountains situation and being an advocate for giving away land that he had no say in whatsoever, and went around and told people that the whole city wanted to give the land away, which is absolutely false, and reduced our tax base and reduced the ability of farmers to have land. And that's what he, and he came on the show one time and said other people on the show were politicians. He was a statesman. What's that based on? Is he out of the line of Churchill, Alexander the Great, Charlemagne, Reagan? I mean, how is he a statesman? Where would you have the opportunity in this city to be a statesman? But even if you did, how has his leadership been emblematic of being a statesman? I was so confused when he said that. But I mean, the job in this city, the opportunity is to make the lives of people better. How would you do that? Well, you'd make the city easier to deal with. You'd make it less onerous to open businesses here. You'd reduce red tape. You'd cut taxes. Instead of having to, and there's something about this county. They feel like they have the right and the privilege and the duty to raise taxes. Why don't you go fill up those empty buildings with businesses and raise the taxes naturally? Why do you have to hit this city? This is heartbreaking to see that a quarter of the people in this county are living below the poverty line, and another quarter are living right above it. That half of the people in this county is poor, and you can't wait to tax them. The first opportunity you get, you're going to raise your taxes. It's tragic. But I feel as if this guy is out of touch. He doesn't want the job. Told me that he's doing it to get a retirement. And he's obnoxious, in my opinion, an obnoxious person who talks down to people. Now, I don't choose, give my blessing to candidates. So there's three people in the race. 717, we've got Judge Ryan here, and looking forward to talking to him. Kelly O'Connell and Mayor Ken, you're still welcome to come on the show, and I will treat you like a prince if you show up. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450.
Well, since my baby left, will I find a new place to dwell? Well, it's down at the end of Lone Street, that heartbreak hotel. Well, I've been just so lonely, baby. Well, I'm so lonely. I'll be just so lonely, you could die.
Folks, in 7:20, and just to kind of to tidy up the comments that I made before the last break, I think that I don't really know the mayor. I don't really know him other than what I see him say in public, and whatever interactions that I have with him. Some have been pleasant, some have been a little bit unpleasant. I think he's made mischaracterizations. When we went to the Oregon, we had the debate on the Oregon Mountains in the city council. And I went after the fact that he said that everybody was behind him. And then he said something about, well, nobody wants to come on my show. They gave us 1 minute to talk there. And the fix was in the Oregon Mountains were going to be given away no matter what. But I just thought that the way the meeting was handled was ridiculous. I thought it really exposed people on the city council. This is one of the hardest places in the country to open a business, according to lists that they draft on the subject. So that's one reason that we have so many empty buildings. People don't want to come in from the outside. And obviously people on the inside find it onerous and ominous to try to think about opening a business here. So you got all this empty commercial property that's going to seed. But the mayor is arrogant, and it makes it even worse if he's a figurehead and he's supposed to be just another member of the city council. Why does he want to be mayor? He tried to get another job as the county manager, and he didn't make it through the first round. He's not qualified to be the county manager. How is he therefore qualified to be the mayor? And beyond that, I got to ask you, does he even want to be mayor? Is it just for the pension? Doesn't this suggest term limits should come along? But here's the bottom line that any person should ask themselves. What has this city been like for the last 8 years? How have we improved ourselves? What percentage of empty buildings have we filled with businesses? How have we increased the amount of visitors from outside? What industries have we built up or opened? What new things for our kids? You know, if you talk to a kid from this area, they'll tell you one of their big problems here is there's not a lot to do. And in the rest of the state, when there's not a lot to do, it leads to drug problems. So, I mean, I just think that the mayor has fallen down on the job and has never gotten up again. That's my theory. Anyway, switching gears, we've got Judge Ryan here. Good morning to you, Judge Ryan.
Good morning, Kelly. Thanks for having me this morning.
Always, always, always great to have you in the studio. And so how are things going? How's the campaign going?
Well, as you're aware, Judge Miller Burns is retiring after 16 years of the presiding position at municipal court. And I'm running for that position. And as I've indicated to you on your show before, I've been a sitting judge in municipal court for 17 and a half years, first as an alternate and then secondarily as a full-time elected municipal judge. Essentially, the campaign is going really, really well. We've been meeting. I've been meeting a lot of people and going different places, and the reception's been really extraordinary.
Well, that's good. I know a lot of people in the city have been in front of you. I practiced in front of you, and I noticed one thing. I would say your court is efficient, number one. Number two, it's a court of respect. People are not disrespected, but you're not a judge that puts up with foolishness either. I've noticed that. There's a time for compassion, and then there's a time that you kind of get people up close to the bench there and give them a little come to Jesus moment.
Well, that's only if somebody's, you know, it is truly a people's court. And when you have people there, you know, people come in all different shapes and sizes and different thinking, you know, and sometimes somebody wants to usurp the judicial process by being disruptive. That's not being just disrespectful to me, but it's being disrespectful to the flag that's behind me. It's being disrespectful to the court system. And so, you know, you have to take matters. You have to take matters. Now, thank goodness, it doesn't happen very often. But I think an example I can probably give you when somebody comes into court at 8 o'clock in the morning and they're inebriated. Now, that to me is a sign of disrespect, you know, and that person may have an alcohol problem, one could say. But one could also say that after the court is over with, and they're, wherever they're going, or they're going home, and they have plenty of time to drink. But, you know, and if somebody comes to my court inebriated, depending on the circumstances, you know, they usually get a contempt from me, you know. So those are just some of the things that you need to control about the court, because it's not, like I said, not just a disrespect for me or flag behind me, but it's also a disrespect to the people of this city, you know. And I think tend to think collaterally when that happens. Now, if all the people of Las Cruces were sitting in this courtroom, what would they do? Well, the answer is obvious. So you have to think.
You're representing the people, in other words. Absolutely. You're representing the authority of the city,
right,
and the state.
Well, yes. You know, I'm a representative, ambassador of the city, judicial ambassador, as it were, you know. You know, I interpret plug the law into the facts, you know, cases and so forth. But you can't disrespect the people.
What do you think when somebody shows up in court and they're wearing flip flops and shorts and, you know, glasses on the head and everything? What, I mean, what do you think, there's a certain way people should dress when they're attending court?
Oh, yes. Well, you should be respectful. Not just, like I say, you should be respectful for everybody. Now, it kind of depends on if it's 120 degrees outside, you know, I can understand that. But, you know, we don't let people come in there with, like, wife beaters on, you know, the court. I may make a comment to somebody if their shirt is really, like, it looks like they slept in it or something, you know. They may say something, you know. Because a lot of people that do that, and I will tell you that the vast majority do not. But the, you know, 0.1% to come in, you know, I'll tell them to cinch their pants up, you know, their pants up.
Sure.
You know, and it's just like they come in and they're talking a lot and so forth. You know, we want them to be respectful, you know, so that other people's cases can be heard.
Absolutely. So, you're running for the head of the court. Your aspiration. You're not the head right now. Judge Miller Burns is, and she's retiring. So you're trying to leave from one judicial spot within the municipal court to another. What are some of the changes again that you wanted to bring in?
Well, I'd like to increase the amount of money that the indigent council gets paid, and that amount has not changed since 1992.
$100.
It's $100 per case. Now, I tend to believe that, you know, the more someone is paid, the more quality and the more time they're going to pay attention to the case. And they're going to be a little bit more. And it's really not fair to the defendant, you know. I mean, to, you know, because the defendant needs to have you know, full. If we're going to appoint a court or a court or attorney, you know, we want to make sure that that person's you know, going to show up, going to be there, going to talk to their client, and so forth. And you know, for them to be paid, you know, a lot more than they're getting paid. Number two is I'd like to bring back the defensive driving school. That's always been that was a big hit when it was going on.
What happened to it?
Well, we don't know. But I don't know. I think
did the director leave town?
It must have. You know, something happened.
Night train to Juarez.
But you know, if you get a ticket and you go to defensive driving school, depending on what the circumstances are, then your ticket's erased. I like that aspect of it. I also have been working on city council. You know, I'll be working more closely with them on getting, you know, larger orders for the basically, when working at larger quarters for municipal court, you can, you know, so there won't be any lines in the morning and so forth.
There's a lot of people for the size of the court, for the number of judges. The municipal court is the busiest court in town.
Yes, it can be pretty busy.
Well, I mean, if you think you've got one judge, sometimes two judges,
right,
that are working, and you have hundreds of people coming in front of the judges every day. I think,
right,
per person, per judge, that's more than any other court in this city.
Yes. Yep, absolutely. That's why there's a line outside. And we need more space, and we need more accommodation for the people. And so I'm going to be working fastidiously with the council to try to achieve that during my term as presiding judge. And so another couple other things.
Well, let's get back. What do you want to talk about when we come back?
I want to talk about the possibility of night court.
Sounds fantastic. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, and have Judge Ryan on, and he's running for municipal. The opening position with Judge Miller Burns out. Judge Ryan's on the court bench already and has been there for almost 20 years, and we'll come back and talk about night court.
Oh, though it's always crowded, you still can find some room for broken hearted lovers to cry when the gloom will be so cool. Make you so lonely, baby. Make you so lonely.
It's Kelly here. I've got Judge Ryan, Karen Ryan, and Judge, you're talking about night court. Are you sure the citizens of this town are ready for innovation?
Well, you know, in an effort to accommodate the municipal court crowds, we used to have night court some 10 or 15 years ago, and it faded out, but you know, sometimes night court is good for people that got to work all day and they can't deal with their infractions that they get during the day, you know. Night court is a good way to accommodate that sector. It's also a good way to accommodate the police officers that come down there, you know, because they can come in and
That work at night.
Yeah, the ones that work at night. So if we could accommodate, you know, without too much overtime to the city, you know, I would not be opposed to a night court situation once a week. And then a lot of these, and that would take a lot of pressure off the line in the morning.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
it's they're like termites. They're always working, the police officers. But
yeah.
Just kidding. But well, we got to have police presence 24/7 because, you know, I'm sure at night some of the worst things happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, you have talked about your background in the military, your background in private business, and your background in the big city and the small city. You've lived in tiny towns. You lived in big city. All of this gives you a little bit more insight into the people that come in front of you.
Oh, absolutely. You know, because that's who comes in front of me. People from small towns, people from big cities. But mostly people from here in Las Cruces and, who hasn't gotten a ticket in their life, you know, I mean, but believe it or not, I have had people come in there 85, 90 years old. This is my first ticket, Judge, all my life, you know, and, it happens, you know, and there's some people that go through life and never get tickets. There are some people that go through life and they get a ticket every week. And we bring them in there. I said, you know, I'm going to name a street after you. You know, because you've been contributing to the coffers of this city for a very long period of time. And,
the street of broken dreams.
You're right. But most people are very, very respectful to come in my court. And they want to get their case heard. They want to come in and, in an efficient manner, in a polite, dignified manner. They want to get it taken care of and get on their way without it having to be too severe or take too big of a chunk out of their lives, you know. So basically, I try to accommodate that. And, another matter that I think that has been brought up in every one of these forums that I've been to, which is the mental health issue. Now, in my courtroom every day, I see people that struggle with mental health issues.
Is it the bailiffs? Is it the clerks?
Yeah, well, they're not quite that stressed out.
Just kidding. Well, hey, mental health, let's talk about that, but we do have a call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Hi, this is Johnny.
Johnny, hey, I hope you're well, Johnny. Thanks for the call. And first-time caller?
Yes, sir.
Oh, fantastic. What's on your mind?
You know what? I've always had a theory that if you're the first person in line whenever you have a ticket, that if you're the first person to see the judge, that one automatically gets dismissed. So if he could care to comment on that. And then also, you line up there at 6 in the morning and the judge doesn't come in until 9. Is there a way we can change the time for him to come in a little earlier, maybe at 7?
Good questions. Number one, does the first person get a mulligan, as they say in golf? Does he get a freebie? And the second question is there any way to not have to wake up at 4 in the morning to come down to municipal court?
Well, first person in line, no. No, that's
they should. The first person should get a reward.
Right. Yeah, no. It just kind of depends on what the infraction is, you know, pretty much. But the first person in line gets to be taken care of first. And they get to be the first one out of there.
They should have coffee and a donut and their ticket dismissed, in my opinion.
Your second point about, first of all, heretofore, I have not set the policies down at municipal court. Judge Miller Burns does that. We open at 7:30 in the morning, and the judge takes the bench at 9 o'clock. And the reason that is because we open at 7:30 in the morning, you know, because then by the time the judge takes the bench, you have a full courthouse, full courtroom. And so we can make our way through there. I'm pretty fast. I can see somebody And it takes me about, 20 seconds, 30 seconds to find out if the person wants to plead guilty, what's going to happen in the case and move on. Okay, so I can go through a crowd of probably 50 people in a very short period of time. Okay, so now having...
I think he's talking about, though, is Johnny, what time do you get to the court in the morning?
So I get there at 6, and you do wait about 2 hours before the judge finally gets into the courtroom. So
all right. So the obvious,
like that,
Charlie, with the obvious question is, why not get there at say 7?
Well, because by that time you wouldn't see the judge till about 11 or 12.
Huh. Well, I've never heard that.
Well, that has not been my experience. Now, come there on Monday morning. And even if there's a line outside and you get in there, when I take the bench, I'm completely finished with arraignments by 10:30. I'm done. I'm out of there because I've seen them all. And I might have seen 150 people. That's not been my experience. I don't know. But if you're coming there at 6 o'clock in the morning, in undoubtedly you'd be the first one in line. But you'd have to wait an hour and a half before the window opens up if you come at 6 o'clock in the morning. So you've already waited an hour and a half of the 3 hour time period. So, and if you get in there at 7:30 and you're the first one in, you're going to be the first one called. So you're going to be out of there at 9 o'clock if you're the first one in line.
And according to your theory, Johnny, you're going to have a freebie on your ticket.
It's always happened to me. I don't have too many tickets, but anytime I'm the first person in line, it seems like the judge does a 90-day deferral or dismisses it or something.
It's like visiting the Pope. Well, thanks for the call, Johnny. Oh, we have another call here. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Pedro.
Pedro, what's up?
Okay, Judge. Let me tell you, Kelly, that's Johnny guys are 100% right. Go in. If you show up late being 7th, forget it. You're going to be there several hours. And put your Judge, you guys need to put your place in the people. You need to sit in their shoes for once. I got cited. Yeah, ultimately, not guilty. Not guilty means I was innocent. As an innocent citizen, I was pissed off because I had to be inconvenienced for so long. And let me tell you, it sucks.
Well, let me just address that. First of all, when you come into court and you did not commit the infraction, number one, the police officer that gave you that infraction is the person that has charged you with that crime. Okay, so that police officer believes that you committed that infraction. That's why you got the ticket. Then you come into court, and if you plead not guilty, great. What I'll do typically, and what I have to do, is I have to set that up for a trial to determine whether or not you are in fact guilty or not guilty. And the police officer comes to that trial, then we have a trial, and that's how the justice systems work. Now, prior to going to trial, we have what we call
All due respect, John, you're talking about two trips to the courthouse by that point.
Yeah, I know, but if you plead not guilty, then you have to be adjudicated at that point. I mean, I can't just dismiss it if you plead not guilty.
Yes, I understand the judicial process. Please, I understand that people get very frustrated, and what Johnny said is right. Even a person who shows up at 7 in the morning, not even being talked to by the judge until 9:30 or so, that's unacceptable, sir.
Is that upstairs?
That's all over. It's both at municipal and magistrate.
Huh. Okay, Pedro, thanks for the call. Good call. All right, folks, we've got to take a little break here and come back and get Judge Ryan's reflections on these calls. And if you were calling in, I missed a call, so we had three calls at once, so call back 523-1450. Kelly O'Connell, 805. Well, actually, I don't have the text machine. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, 523-1450. We'll be back to get the judge's reflections on these problems. But remember, he's not the presiding judge yet.
The bell seems to keep flowing, the death threats that's in black. Well, it's been so long.
Hey, it's Kelly. It's Kelly.
Kelly, it's Ralph.
Ralph, what's
up? I don't
want
to ask the judge this question in, on the air. She's badly mistaken about that first come, first serve. They were taking them in alphabetical order. So you could be there at 7 o'clock in the morning, and then if your name starts with a C or whatever, you're going to sit there until your name is called. Now, I don't want to say that over the air, okay?
Okay, Ralph. Thank you. Have a good day. And Kelly, 747, flying the friendly skies, and Judge Ryan is going to respond to some of these anguished calls.
Well, I understand people don't want to wait in line, and nobody wants to wait in line. You go down to El Paso Electric, there's probably going to be a line on Monday morning. But as a presiding judge, I want to implement things that will make it more convenient for people to come down there and take care of their ticket. Now, we have three windows. Maybe we need a fourth window, and that's something that I
that
value.
Sounds like a beautiful idea.
Yeah, I value the feedback on the people coming in there. They want to get their ticket taken care of. Yeah.
We've got a phone call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, this is Neil. Hi, Kelly.
Neil, what's up?
Hey, I just wanted to side with the judge here. I think the judge is being a little bit too nice. You know, these knuckleheads like Pedro, who are obviously breaking the law often and happen to go to the courtroom, they're the ones who crowd the courtroom and make it take forever for things to get done.
So the problem is lawlessness.
Yeah, I think the problem, of course, law is this, but the problem with people like Pedro is whining.
Huh.
Whining, Pedro, and stop breaking the law, too, by the way. See you guys.
Thanks. That's a little harsh, huh?
Well, everybody has their own opinion on the matter, I think. But,
anyway, the main thing is that you're not the presiding judge right now. You don't set the rules for the court.
Right.
You're a smart guy. I've known you for a long time. You're the person that I would go to for advice in the past when I had a conundrum. I know that, I believe anyway, that you would have if you saw a problem, you'd try to figure out a logical way to answer it. And we've got another call. Thanks for the call to Kelly Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Eric. I was just calling to say that last guy, it was obvious he was driving while he was talking on the phone. So he should stop breaking the law, too.
Great call, Eric. Have a good day.
Good
Got another
point.
Call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who is this?
Kelly, this is Ralph. This is for that goody-goody two-shoes. If it wasn't for us lawbreakers, you wouldn't have any lawyers, judges, police officers.
Well, that's a good point.
Tell him to get off of his pedestal.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this? All right. So we've all right. So thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Pedro.
Yes, go ahead, Pedro.
Hey, I want it to my bonehead buddy who's driving while talking on the dang cell phone. he didn't listen to my call. I was not guilty. I was not guilty of the charges. And, sir, things don't get fixed if you don't let the people who are in charge of things know that there's a problem.
That's a good point.
Thanks, Kelly.
Thanks, Pedro. All right, folks, we've got, the lines are lighting up like it's a 911 center. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this? I'll put you on hold. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for the call. Who's this?
Hey, this is Neil.
Go ahead.
Hey, for everybody's advice out there, I got this thing called a Bluetooth. I'm not breaking the law. Second of all, you're still whining, Pedro. See you guys.
Thanks, Neil. All right, folks. Well, everybody's had their own misery in court, so don't blame the judge. So not everybody who gets pulled over is a lawbreaker. There's sometimes mistakes, but everybody has a bad day. Anyway, 752 Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE with Judge Karen Ryan. We'll be back.
It's a lonely baby. Well, there's a lonely. Well, there's
so lonely, they could die.
Hey, it's Kelly. Who's this?
Yes, it's Deborah. I just put you on. What judge is on?
Judge Karen Ryan.
Oh, I don't know who that is. Yeah, maybe after the show. Do you have to go to court or something?
As a matter of fact.
I need to make you aware how the courts are really screwing up, not taking our monies, what's it called? When you're fighting in the courts, I just woke up a little bit ago, so that's why I can't think too straight. They're going against their own policy, what's on the paperwork. So thank God legal aid's finally getting involved, and they're putting a conjunction or whatever it's called.
A conjunction? Conjunction, junction?
Injunction.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, wait. Against the courts,
Deborah,
they won't take
Deborah,
people's money.
Deborah,
they tell you to
Deborah,
go to an escrow.
Deborah,
an escrow.
Let's,
there's no
Deborah.
Escrow in Las Cruces.
Bye-bye. Kelly here, 753. Folks, if you call me on air or off the air, please listen. Just for God's sakes, I know I've said this 10,000 times, but if you call up and you say something to me, in theory, it's a conversation. That's why you're calling a radio show, right? So if you say something, wait for a response. Okay, so Judge, there's been a lot of anguished calls, and there's you know, some people that have pointed fingers, and I don't know, it seems like a little dissatisfaction with, you know, some of the stuff. We can address that. How?
Well, you know, I appreciate everybody calling in. I appreciate everybody's thoughts, you know, because they are all a part of the judicial system, and really, they're the ones that make it better. Because when they call in and they say things, well, that makes us tweak it a little bit and make it a little bit better. Like
the squeaky wheel is going to get the grease.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that goes with the judicial system as well. And so, you know, maybe we put in a fourth window.
How about a suggestion box?
We could do that. But, yeah, sure. You know, we could do that. But we could also put in a fourth window. We can expand the hours.
And
we start court a little earlier.
That sounds great. Yeah. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show put you on hold. Thanks for the call, the Kelly Connor Show. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Tom. I want to wish Judge Ryan there good luck with his endeavors, and it sounds like he's trying to help.
Well, I think he is from all appearances. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly Connor Show. Who's this?
It's Frank.
Yeah, Frank. Morning. What's up?
Well, the judge just alluded to it with regard to expanding the hours. I heard talking about maybe night court.
Yeah.
What about the possibility of starting and getting the judge on the bench earlier? I've only been in 18 years down there once, but every time I go by, there's a line out there very early in the morning. Let's get the judges up early.
Okay, Frank, thanks for the call. Judge Ryan.
Yeah, well, I have no problem with taking the bench earlier. I have not set the policy up heretofore once I've become presiding judge. You know, I was in the Navy, you know, and I'm used to getting up early. So I don't have a real problem with it as long as there's a cup of coffee around. You know, I mean, I can start the thing at 7 o'clock. It doesn't bother me at all.
But I mean, if you started that early, I mean, you're going to be on the bench till 5. So,
well, yeah, you know, but the thing is, we want to accommodate people that are, you know, and that's why I think that we can open the court maybe one night a week, like on a Wednesday night.
Could it be like a party a little bit? You know, maybe some, I don't know, some Kool-Aid or something. I mean, curious people. I've got a question for you. How about a moratorium on getting arrested once a month, once a year for people with outstanding tickets and warrants? A grace period.
Explain that.
Well, they could come down and, no matter what they've got with the municipal court, they'll get adjudicated. I suppose they're just arrested and thrown in the Crowbar Motel. They'll be arrested, or not arrested, but they'll just be processed, so they don't have to. Now that may cut down on the work that attorneys have, but how about something like that, a moratorium in a grace period or whatever they call it, so people can get their stuff taken care of without fear? Or is that asking too? Is it going too far?
I think in the past administration has done a moratorium or an amnesty on these fines that are outstanding. Currently, there are millions of dollars that have not been paid.
Folks, if we got all that funding, we could have a petting zoo for the children of Las Cruces. That's one idea. Judge O'Brien was not impressed by that idea.
We could have a petting zoo, but not in municipal court.
That would lead to other fines and charges.
Right. No, but if we had one night during the week, these people would come in, take care of it, and it doesn't interfere with their business, doesn't interfere with their going to work.
Unless they're a pimp. I'm just saying. But
I think these things need to be accommodated, though.
Thanks for coming on the show, Judge. We appreciate that.
My pleasure. Absolutely, my pleasure. I really, really, really appreciate the feedback. You know, good, bad, and ugly, it doesn't matter to me. I appreciate it, and I'm taking it all in, believe me.
Folks, you've been listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE with Judge Kieran Ryan. He's running for municipal judge, the top spot. He's in the other judge seat right now. And I'm trying to get all of the candidates on. If you know anybody who hasn't come on, like Eli Guzman. Guzman said he was going to be on two Fridays ago and then was polite enough and kind enough to do a no-call, no-show. I've never heard from him again. Eli, why are you avoiding the show? And all the other people like Mayor Ken Miyagashima. Get on here, Ken. Let's have a tearful reunion. Folks, thanks for listening in. Hope you have a great day. Look out for that lightning in the rain. Day chow.
Well, if your baby leaves you, you've got a tale to tell. Or just take a walk down over the street to heartbreak hotel where you will be. You're so lonely, baby. You'll be lonely. You'll be so lonely. You could die.